You're listening to Uprising. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. Following his unsuccessful attempt to return to Honduras, ousted President Manuel Zelaya has begun a tour of Central America to gather support. The Organization of American States just suspended Honduras from its membership after the opposition refused to reverse the coup. Zelaya tried to fly into the main airport at the Honduran capital of Tegucigalpa over the weekend, but was prevented from landing by the opposition, which covered the runway with military vehicles. Thousands of Zelaya's supporters gathered at the airport to greet him and clashed with police. At least two people were killed in the ensuing violence. Zelaya has vowed to make another attempt to return. Meanwhile, in the nearby nation of Panama, the new president, Ricardo Martinelli, was sworn in. The pro-business conservative has billed himself as a political independent and vowed to enact changes in Panama's economy. I had the opportunity yesterday to speak with a former tourism minister of Panama and cultural icon, Ruben Blades. Blades is well known for his work in music, particularly Central American Nueva Canción, as well as politically inspired salsa. He's also an actor, songwriter, and lawyer. Blades appeared yesterday on KPFK's Global Village with Maggie LePeak, and I had the chance to sit down with him for a few minutes to reflect on Central American politics. He also told me about his time with Michael Jackson. So, Mr. Blades, how do you explain what is happening right now in the neighboring country of Honduras, the coup that took place? Is it different from other coups we've seen in Central America and other Latin American nations?
Well, what makes this a little different, I think, is the fact that there are elements from the civilian organizations that have worked with the army. Usually the army just went and did whatever they were going to do with consulting with any civilian authority. In this particular case, you have the Congress and Micheletti, who's acting in representation of, as he puts it, the defense of the Constitution. So it's kind of unusual to have this sort of scenario where the civilian arm of the government asks the army to intervene to prevent an alleged constitution violation to take place.
So given that, do you think that it's likely then that there is no outside interference?
There's a problem with the fact that there was a coup d'etat. I mean, you know, and my concern, I'm a lawyer. My concern has to do with the times and whether or not the proper mechanisms of the law run their course. You may have the authority, but your authority resides in the compliance with a series of steps that need to be taken in order to legitimately produce the consequence that the Constitution defends. So now the question for me, and I think the question for many people, is whether or not the President Zelaya broke the law.
They're claiming, in calling for the referendum.
Right. In the process of calling for this referendum, whether or not he broke the law. And if he so did, then he had to be judged there. The procedure is not to get the president, put him on a plane, and make him leave the country. No matter how right the argument may be, the legal steps have not been taken. So that's the issue that keeps us all in a limb. You know, we don't know.
And what about people's sentiments? Where do you think people's sentiments lie? Do you think the country is evenly split between the opposition, or is it just an elite minority that's sort of opposed to Zelaya?
I have very little to go on other than what I hear, and I don't know exactly what is going on. I think a lot of people are not very clear as to what is the real scenario there. And I think it brings just a lot of confusion.
They've cut off a lot of media contact and even closed the airport.
Well, they had the Insulza, who's the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, did go there. And when he returned to report, he reported that there's a lot of confusion. He himself didn't seem to be very clear as to what the real scenario was. I go back to what I said before as a lawyer. You need to comply with a series of steps that are required in order to make something legal, no matter how. It's the same thing as arresting a criminal. If you arrest a criminal and the law says that you must read him or her rights, and you do not do that, even if you caught them in the act, they might later on sue and say they were not reminded of their constitutional rights or a lawyer, et cetera, et cetera. And then the conviction is thrown away. I mean, so that's a scenario right now. As I understand it, I really don't, I'm not clear about what's really going on.
Zelaya supporters have sort of made calls for UN peacekeepers in demonstrations and stuff. What do you think? How unstable is a country? Does it warrant international intervention?
The problem right now is that there is a situation I read this morning, or I saw on the internet this morning, that there had been apparently, unfortunately, fatalities. And unfortunately, when people begin to die, you have to consider that there's something needs to be done to prevent this from occurring. I do think it's a little too early to be talking about any type of intervention of any sort.
What is your opinion of how President Obama here in the U.S. has handled this crisis, given the U.S.'s long history of supporting right-wing dictators and violent coups in Latin America?
I think President Obama is, as everyone, awaiting to see what the real scenarios are. I think that he shouldn't become involved in anything until he's very clear about what the real scenarios are. And like I said, basically, I would think that you want to determine whether or not there was any substance to the accusations against the president originally, and whether or not the process initiated by the Congress had any validity.
So his position and his government's position that they're still trying to determine whether or not to call it a coup, you think is a consistent one based on what your opinion as a lawyer is?
I would tell you right now, yes, because you just don't really understand whether or not, first of all, if you disallow the Congress, then you're disallowing the whole system. Because there is a such thing as separation of powers. You have the judiciary, you have the legislative, and you have the executive. The executive allegedly did something, and the legislative body reacted.
Based on the judiciary's opinions, even, because the Supreme Court in Honduras ruled against the referendum.
That's correct. So now but everything has, see, again, I go back to what I said about steps. There are such things as times that must be fulfilled in accordance to the law, where you can present a recourse against the resolutions or whatever. I know that to a lot of people, this is like, well, this is more nonsense and wasting time. You know what? These laws are in position, and as long as they're in position, we have to abide by them. So the question is whether or not the lapses, the times were respected before the action took place. If the times were not respected, if the authority was not entitled to act the way they acted, then you have to then conclude that it was a coup that was substantiated illegally.
What do you make of the international response and even with the OAS, which has officially suspended Honduras for failing to reverse the situation?
Again, I think that these are initial movements that are based on what appears to be an appreciation of the fact that certain formalities were not met.
A lot of people are quite impressed by how uniformly the international response has been against what's happened.
I think that has to do precisely with what you mentioned before. In 1970, I believe, or 1969, when I did my first album, there were probably about 17 military dictatorships in position. And right now, no one wants to return to the uncertainty of those days. And I guess that's why everybody reacted. I mean, if you even uniformly condemning the coup, if you look at what happened recently in Salvador, for instance, where Farabundo Martí won the vote, and was accepted, by its arch rival, Arena. Everybody right now says, you know what, let's do things, let's respect the will of the people, and let's respect the system, basically, and let's see what the scenarios are.
So would you say then this era that Latin American politics has entered is one of far greater respect for democracy, which is perhaps what's casting the Honduras situation into a greater relief?
Probably it's we have enough to be, I would say, moderately optimistic about the future because, I mean, this can hold change in a moment's time. It's up to people, and it's up to people in each country to defend democracy, and it's also up to international opinion to create the elements that will allow support for the people's will. You know, and at the same time, you have to also deal with the nature of sovereignty of one nation. If the one nation desires to go a certain direction, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden the international opposition to that national will can have any validity in itself. So you have to be very careful about this. How do you handle the scenarios?
I'm speaking with Ruben Blades. Let's talk about your own country, Panama, where you were the tourism minister as of last Tuesday. The new president, mm-hmm. Ricardo Martinelli, was mm-hmm. just sworn in a ceremony actually attended by Zelaya. Mm-hmm. He's a businessman. He's promised to make Panama the best place in the world to do business. He's a conservative. What does he represent for Panama? And where does he fit in the political spectrum of today's Latin American leaders?
I think basically what President-elect Martinelli, the president right now, is trying to do, and I think that the first steps indicate that he wants to fulfill this these campaign promises.
And what were his campaign promises?
Basically, what he was saying is to bring serious a serious way of administering the national wealth and get rid of the traditional way of doing things the political parties have displayed for decades. So he's trying to, he's been saying this, and I believe he's attempting to change the way things have been done for decades in Panama as far as the fact that he has no political real debts with any of the political parties existing in Panama that have been in and out of government for the last, 20 years. What is going? Some people describe him as a right wing, but I don't see that. In Panama, there's really no ideology to speak of as saying that somebody is following the right wing designs of an international right wing. You know, it's more, I think, pragmatic than anything.
Now, he has aligned himself with the Mexican and Colombian leadership, which are the two most right leaning in the continent.
I would think it's more a pro-business position than an ideological position.
He's talked about joining the fight against the war against drugs with these two leaders, which isn't that a pretty big bone of contention for many in Latin America with the U.S.'s support of fighting the so-called drug war?
I don't think so. I think that everybody wants to get rid of the problem of the drug trafficking and all the instability it creates around the region. I don't see that as a Troy horse to, in any way intervene. We have a problem with drug trafficking and the power that the money that comes from drug trafficking places for any government in the area. And I think it makes perfect sense if you have the problem emanating from countries like Colombia and or Mexico, and not in terms of the countries themselves, but in terms of the operations of cartels, then you have to deal with the presidents of each of those countries and see what you can do to make it less successful for the narco traffickers.
Do you think that the war on drugs is being fought in the right way?
No, I don't think so. I think I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a scenario where the legalization of drugs should be contemplated seriously. At the end of the day, people are the ones who use the drugs. You know, how can you prevent people from doing something that they want to do? Mm-hmm. And what the consequences are of that is that the prohibitions themselves feed off the worst angels possible of the human character, and it creates havoc for everyone.
Ruben Blades, finally, I hope you don't mind me asking mm-hmm. this complete change of pace from the politics we've been talking about today is the Michael Jackson Memorial mm-hmm. downtown in Los Angeles. And mm-hmm. you mentioned before the interview that you spent 3 days with Michael Jackson yeah. helping him record the only Spanish language song he's sung. Can mm-hmm. you tell us about that?
Well, I got a call from Quincy Jones, and then this is a while ago, I think in the 1980s. And he mentioned that Michael Jackson wanted to record in Spanish. And Quincy had wanted me to help him with that. And I wrote the Spanish lyrics of a song that Michael Jackson had recorded called I Just Can't Stop Loving You. I wrote the version in Spanish, for which he was kind enough also to give me credit. I mean, I got my royalty statement and my publishing right recognized. And I went and I worked with him for 3 days. And it was very interesting because contrary to what was being reported at the time, he seemed very quiet, very normal, a tremendous worker. Michael Jackson is one of the most professional people I've ever worked with. He did such a wonderful job. For 3 days we were there, and he insisted in getting it right. He wasn't just happy with it being okay. And I spent 3 days with him. Humberto Gatica was the engineer, Quincy Jones, the producer, and Michael Jackson and myself, and that was it. There was no one else in the studio at any time. And he proved to be really a wonderful artist and a great professional. And I didn't talk about it afterwards. I think no one really knows about this. And ultimately, Michael Jackson did such a great job singing the song in Spanish that when it was presented to CBS, to his record label, they didn't believe it was him. His pronunciation was so impeccable. And I got to say this at the end. I think he sang that song in Spanish better than what he sang it in English. I think he was really connected, and he was we're all sorry that he went so early.
Ruben Blades, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Todo mi amor eres tú. Todo mi amor eres tú.